Why are women underrepresented in tech? One answer to that question, offered by a University of Washington lecturer, has ignited a fierce debate in the tech industry. Stuart Regis is a principal lecturer at the UW's Allen School of Computer Science and Engineering. His hypothesis goes like this. The low percentage of women studying computer science and going into technical careers comes down to personal preference, not systemic barriers. I'm GeekWire's civic innovation editor, Monica Nicholsberg, and I sat down with Stuart to discuss his essay, Why Women Don't Code. The piece is stirring up strong feelings about one of tech's most pervasive challenges because of ideas like this.
The support for unconscious bias is pretty weak and unraveling more day by day. You know, that I don't think there is strong scientific evidence. It fits a nice political narrative that, oh, we live in an oppressive society. It's all about sexism and the patriarchy. But I don't believe that that is backed up by scientific evidence.
That's a hard pill for many in the university community to swallow. Rushika Tulsiyan is the author of The Diversity Advantage and an adjunct instructor at the University of Washington. She advises companies on diversity and inclusion. We connected with Rushika to get her impressions of Stuart's essay.
Wow. There's very, very strong body of evidence. I mean, make of Harvard what you will, but whether it's the Harvard Business School, whether it's Harvard Kennedy School, whether it's their psychology department, organizational behavior, I mean, it is extremely, extremely difficult to argue against the evidence that places like Harvard, and now not only Harvard, but across the board, in different industries, in different countries all over the world, it's really hard to argue against the existence of unconscious biases. It's not rooted in science. So right now, I feel like we're debating whether the earth is flat at this point.
But Stuart subscribes to a different school of thought. In his essay, he aligns himself with James Damore, the Google engineer who was fired for publishing his theory for why it's so hard to get more women into tech. James and Stuart argue that women are less interested in computer science than men because of fundamental differences between the two.
Well, I think Damore was really misrepresented in the media. You know, we probably don't need to relitigate all of those things. But, you know, people thought he was talking about ability, but mostly he was talking about interest. I wanted to be very clear that it's about interests. It's not about ability. I'm not saying women can't code. I'm saying they're just not necessarily choosing to code. There also was this kind of this issue of the biological. Is it biological? And I think that was a distraction to kind of have that argument. So actually in my article, I pointed to the people who write about diversity to point out that men and women are different. One of the things you hear these days is that diverse teams perform better. But you could only believe that's true if women bring something to the team that men don't. I mean, if you believe there are differences between men and women. And people often talk about how women have different values. There's a concern that men have created a culture that appeals to them and it won't appeal to women. But that only makes sense to talk about if you think there are differences.
There are fundamental differences in the way men and women have been conditioned. Absolutely. There is no two ways about that. It's also interesting how much family dynamics play into it. A woman who was born in South Asia in a middle-class family will have very, very different ideas about women and men and the role of society than a woman born in poverty in America, right? Generations matter, socioeconomic background matters, everything, literally everything plays into the neurodiversity that we develop as a result of our conditioning. So to Stuart's point, I think there are fundamental differences between men and women in the way that they've been conditioned, not in the way that they've been hardwired.
Women make up about 30% of the University of Washington's computer science department. That's higher than the 18% average across the country. But Stuart predicts that we've reached a plateau at 30%, and we aren't likely to get closer to 50-50. He thinks as long as we're creating equal opportunities for women, we shouldn't worry as much about equal results. I asked him to elaborate on that position. Let's circle back to the equity versus equality agenda.
Sure.
So in your essay, you argue that we should focus on creating equal opportunities and then not really worry as much about achieving equal results. So in other words, women and men are equally encouraged to go into computer science and have the same access to that opportunity. But if that doesn't lead to closer than 30% of women actually becoming computer scientists, so be it. There's nothing we can do about that.
Or we could celebrate. Maybe 30% is a reason to celebrate. Maybe we've done a great job.
But if you're not seeing equal results, then how do you really know that you're creating equal opportunities? What's the way you measure that?
2/3 of the communication journalism degrees go to women. Does that have to be fixed? 70% of psychology degrees go to women. Does that have to be fixed? I mean, or a huge gender gap. Only 43% of the undergraduate degrees go to men. 57% go to women. Is that a gender gap that you're trying to fix? You know, why is it that in all these areas where men are, I mean, women are doing much better than men, there's no concern. But in this one area, this is the area where we've got to get parity.
Well, this is the area where there's some of the most upward mobility in terms of career advancement, in terms of making money, in terms of being a leader in the modern economy.
Well, we just heard that more women are going to med school than men, and doctors make pretty good salaries.
I asked Rushika what she thought about that. Is medicine evidence that gender bias isn't as insidious as we make it out to be?
More women are getting medical degrees. They are still not going into the highest paid, most lucrative fields within medicine. So even there, there's a very clear bias, again, very much based on the gendered roles that we receive young in life. You know, so women tend to become family care providers, primary physicians, and make considerably less money than, you know, the high, most highly paid lucrative fields such as cardiology and neurology. So even within that, there's a definite gender bias. I think medicine has made huge strides in becoming more receptive to women, and more girls are seeing that their mothers or their aunts or people they know going into medicine, you know, it depends where you practice and again, what field you practice in. But I've definitely seen, you know, medicine understand that the pressures and the social conditioning put on women, specifically women as caregivers, and accommodate for that.
We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back. On this episode of the GeekWire podcast, we're discussing a controversial essay by University of Washington computer science lecturer Stuart Regis. Stuart argues that the low percentage of women in computer science comes down to personal preference, not institutional bias. We're also speaking with diversity expert and part-time University of Washington lecturer Rushika Tulshyan to get her perspective on these topics. Rushika and other diversity advocates argue that it's social conditioning, not biology, that influences the careers many women choose. If that's the case, then the needle can be moved by changing the message women receive. But not everyone is convinced. So what we're talking about is a culture that tells many women that STEM is not really for them, right?
A culture that says STEM is not. I mean, is that the message you see? I mean, I actually see so many messages these days in the opposite direction. I mean, I see a lot of people saying we need to fix the problems of the past, convince young women that they can do this. I know so many passionate K-12 teachers who are out there trying to make sure that that's the message that's going out there. I don't know very many teachers these days who are saying, young women, you shouldn't major in STEM.
I see it shifting now. Mm-hmm. I don't think that erases decades in which that very much was the messaging.
I don't know that it was the message for decades. I think that in a way there wasn't a message to women.
I think what he said is actually absolutely what the problem is. So one set of people, i.e. boys, largely white boys, are told STEM is for them. And obviously him not having the lived experience of being told that STEM isn't for him is obviously that, you know, he draws from that experience. It's very, very much a problem all over the world. I grew up in Singapore. I was good at maths and told that I wasn't. I loved physics. I actually wanted to continue on in physics and I was good at it. And I've talked about this before, but I had a professor in middle and high school who was racist and sexist and really put me off pursuing physics. It's a problem all over the world.
And when we talk about this idea that STEM isn't for girls, what does that mean? What does that messaging sound like?
I mean, it starts at a very young age where girls are very much encouraged to do things and even dream of their lives later on, their professional lives later on, in fields that are, you know, quote unquote, more receptive to women, you know. So think of yourself as a communicator. Think of yourself as someone who, you know, does well with other people. You know, you're a people person. You're a people pleaser. And these subliminal messages start really young. And, you know, by the same token, a lot of boys are told things like, you're great at maths and you should continue pursuing, you know, you love cars. That's great. You could do something with cars. You love airplanes. Maybe you could be a pilot. And those messages start so young. You know, I have a toddler and he's in daycare. And so much of what I see when I go to his classroom is very, very gendered. You know, boys are taught to play with the cars and, you know, encouraged to continue playing with the cars. The girls are the ones who play with the cooking sets and dolls. And this starts at as young as, you know, 18 months. And it continues along. And this is a huge problem in toys. I mean, that's why there's a growing number of both men and women now trying to develop toys that would get girls interested in STEM, in robotics, in engineering.
In the days since Stewart published his essay, he and his colleagues at the UW have fielded hundreds of messages, many of them expressing outrage and frustration.
People are calling for me to be fired for giving my honest opinion, that this idea is so unacceptable that we must purge the faculty of anyone who has these ideas. That's really dangerous. That's a kind of McCarthyism, you know, that we have figured this out and you are not allowed to disagree.
Stewart told me that he published his essay in part to find out whether we can still have a robust debate over sensitive topics. He admits he could face the same fate as James Damore and be fired for sharing his, quote, honest opinion. To him, it's a question of free speech. But to Rashika, the issue is less about free speech and more about the well-being of Stewart's students. She thinks universities have a responsibility to make students feel welcome and supported.
You can imagine for those women in computer science at UW, think of all the barriers that they overcame anyway to be there, right? And then to have to deal with this, it must be so hard.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the GeekWire podcast. You can find links to Stewart's essay and other sources we discussed in this episode on geekwire.com. If you're not already, you can subscribe to the GeekWire podcast in your favorite podcast app. Just search GeekWire wherever you listen. If you like what we do, consider leaving us a rating and a review. It really helps other people find the show. You can see more of our coverage at geekwire.com. This GeekWire podcast is produced by Claire McGrain. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. See you next time.